government is not our master, it is our servant. Its only power, that which we the people allow it to have.
Liberty Watch is an independent program on KVOI dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master, and operating in the public interest for which the media in this country was designed by exploring controversy. This helps us to resolve our differences peaceably, refining controversy into clarity through investigation, research, interview of experts, and public feedback. Liberty Watch is based in objective reason and is biased towards individual liberty, and so is not the view of the station or anyone but the host, guests, and callers. Liberty Watch operates outside the realm of political correctness, taking no notice at all of race, creed, religion, ethnicity, political affiliation, or orientation, focusing on content of character in eternal vigilance to the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution. The program is paid, produced, hosted, and operated by Charles Heller, and any mistakes are solely his responsibility.
Charlotte Dennett is a fascinating individual. She is an investigative reporter, a very accomplished one. She's an author of four books. The most recent one, and the one on the table, is Follow the Pipelines. And it's I got through about half of it, which is I wish I'd had time for more. And she's also an attorney. I think I said that already three times. That's okay. Welcome to the program for your first time, Charlotte.
Oh, I'm so glad to be on. Thank you, Charles.
My pleasure. This is... What draws you to the milieu of studying how pipelines over historically have led us to war?
Oh, wow. Great opening question.
Thank you for the critique. Thank you for the critique. If I screw up, you can say that too.
I love you saying you're willing to lovingly disagree with me.
I am.
That's wonderful. Okay. My father was on a top secret mission to Saudi Arabia in March 1947, and the purpose of his – America's first master spy in the Middle East. He was working for the Central Intelligence Group, which was then the immediate predecessor of the CIA. And he was sent to Saudi Arabia to determine the route of the Trans-Arabian Pipeline, which was a major, major industrial investment at the time. And I learned about that mission because I have his last letter home and his last report. On his way back, he took a trip to Ethiopia, and his plane crashed and killed him and five others on board, all high-level pilots and intelligence assets, and the petroleum attaché, by the way. Hmm. And that got me interested. This happened way back, as I say, in March 47. I was an infant, and I didn't know much about my father at the time, obviously, 6 weeks old, but later I became a reporter in Lebanon. I grew up in Winchester, Massachusetts. I went to school in Massachusetts. I ended up going to graduate school in Italy, of all places, and after my mother's death, I went to Beirut. But I'd been there in high school, too, which was a huge education for me. So tracking the Trans-Arabian Pipeline, and I sued the CIA for information about my father, and one of the things that I found was his marching orders when he was going to Lebanon in 43 as part of the OSS, Office of Strategic Services, which was America's first spy agency. And it was called an analysis of work. And his top priority was to protect the oil at all costs. That really struck me. And what I would later learn is that this was a meme that has continued all the way to the present. Oil is so valuable. At the time, Saudi oil was immensely valuable. It was a huge, rich find. All of our erstwhile allies during World War II were intensely jealous that the United States had gotten an exclusive concession for Saudi oil.
In fact, they became our competitors instead of our allies.
What I learned is that he wasn't spying on the Germans. They'd already been removed and wiped out from that part of the world. No, he was spying on our allies, the French, the British, and the Soviets. So that got me into the whole concept of the great game for oil, which is on steroids right now.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone competing against each other, the war in Ukraine, the war in Gaza. But I went back and found the origins, not only in World War II, but I had to go back even farther in history because I found this incredible article and map that appeared in the New York Times, March 2, 1947. The title of it was Pipeline for U.S. Adds to Middle East Issues, and then the subtitle, Oil Concessions Raise Questions Involving Position of Russia. So it was back then. This is like before people thought the Cold War was going on. There was concern about Russia's influence in the Middle East because it's much closer, if you look on a map, it's much closer to the Middle East than the United States. So a lot of spying on Russian interests. But there was this incredible map, too, and it also appears on the cover of my book.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows two pipelines from Iraq, one of them which terminated in Haifa, Palestine, which would soon become Israel, and then there was a projected pipeline that showed the route of the Trans-Arabian pipeline. So what I'm saying, I would really encourage listeners to pull out a map that shows the countries bordering the Eastern Mediterranean and how they are juxtapositioned to the major oil producers in the Middle East. And that's how I began to get a handle on the role of oil, and protecting pipeline routes, which are called, my father's contemporary called the TAP line, the Trans-Arabian mm-hmm. pipeline, an artery of empire. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I realized the importance.
It even goes back well before World War II, the post-World War I, or actually during World War I machinations. You talk about the possibilities of the German railroad going all the way to Baghdad, and that's fascinating stuff.
Oh, good for you. I'm glad. I'm just glad that you picked up on that, because historians are now acknowledging that the German constructed Berlin to Baghdad railroad is likely to have been a major cause of World War I, because the Germans were getting interested in the Middle East and the British were freaking out over this.
Mm-hmm.
The British had a major discovery in Iran, but during World War I, what they were after was the oil of Iraq, which was considered, quote-unquote, a first-class war aim. And the reason is because in 1911, Churchill, who was first Lord of the Admiralty, he ran the British Navy, which relies on fuel. And he realized he had to convert the Navy from coal.
Right. To fuel oil. Yeah. It was so much more efficient to run
it. Much more efficient and cheaper, and it made them run faster. But Britain had lots of coal, but it didn't have any oil.
Yeah, so there's another factor to that, too. And that is, there's another factor to that, too, and
yeah,
that is the weight. Coal weighs so much more than oil does, I think, that you can make a ship. It can hold more, I think.
Oh, that's a very good point. I hadn't realized that, so thank you for that observation. Yeah, so Britain didn't have any. So one key component of the World War I, which doesn't get the attention it deserves, was the British trying to get the oil of Iraq, and that meant defeating the Turks,
mm-hmm.
who controlled the Middle East up until World War One.
It was the Ottoman Empire, right? Yeah,
and so Lawrence of Arabia, that whole story.
Right.
The British used Lawrence, as he was called, to convince the Arabs to join in defeating the Turks and ultimately going east and getting that oil of Iraq. And they succeeded. But here's the thing. How are you going to get the oil to market? It has to be through a pipeline. And so one of the pipelines they devised after the war was this Iraq Petroleum Company pipeline. But I got off the point of the Berlin to Baghdad railroad, because part of that deal was the Germans would build the railroad headed towards Iraq and Iran, and in return, it would go through Turkey, and the Turks would grant oil concessions to either side. That had Britain very concerned. So what I found out is really, in terms of infrastructure, pipelines began to replace railroads when it came to transporting oil. I mean, oil used to be transported in barrels, but now it was pipelines, and you have to secure them. What if you run into enemy territory? The pipelines in the 30s were sabotaged. There was a lot of unrest going on. The Arab revolt against colonialism was happening. Eventually, up till World War II, the Jews who had relocated to Palestine were fighting the British to get them out. So there was these concerns about pipeline attacks. So the job of a spy, one of the jobs, would be to ensure the safety, to diplomatically negotiate with different governments to make sure that it was safe passage. So that's how I got on to the concept of follow the pipelines, and you're going to start understanding the Middle East conflict and all the wars that have been happening there right up to the present.
So we've got 3 minutes of the break, and this is not in your book, but I would think that because, and I know you're not a fan of Mr. Trump, but in fact you're very anti him. That's okay. You have a right to your opinion. The question is, though, you would think that the way he wants to take advantage of American energy resources, that would somewhat de-escalate worldwide conflict and for oil, and that you might tend to be in favor of that, but you don't seem to be.
Well, that's really interesting. In other words, focus on developing energy domestically.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that I am a firm believer that the fossil fuel companies have misled the American people about the impact of fossil fuel on climate. And I mean, how can people look at the devastation that's been going on, certainly in the past 2 years with the fires and the floods, and it's worldwide, and there's a major UN conference now on...
There's no evidence that man causes it. There's computer models...
I'm going to disagree with
that's,
you
that's okay.
That.
That's all right.
There's plenty of evidence.
A lot of anecdotal... There's a lot of facts, but there isn't really... No one's shown conclusive evidence that of the anthropogenic... rise in temperature, in other words, man caused. And in the past, before man even existed, the earth was much warmer. It's not like the dinosaurs were driving Chevy Suburbans.
Cute. Anyway, look, I was prepared for this. All right? I had a feeling you're going to challenge me on this.
Yeah.
And,
well, I told you I was going to.
I just happened to find a study. Now, these are Harvard elites, so
okay.
I know some of your listeners will be skeptical.
Yeah, that's okay.
But there was a couple of Harvard people who did a study and learned that ExxonMobil executives predicted global warming with shocking skill and accuracy starting in the 1970s. And so they did this whole report based on documents they found. And so they've been lying about it to the American public for years.
Don't look at me to defend oil. Don't look at me to defend oil companies.
Oh, well, okay. So anyway, so even if Trump does drill, baby, drill, and I get the argument, you know, stay out of foreign conflicts.
Right.
Well, first of all, I don't think that'll happen. It's the great game is, as I said, is on steroids, and it's almost unavoidable. I think he's going to have to deal with it. But besides that, I understand that a lot of people's livelihoods, particularly in oil country, may be affected. I understand that, and so, you know, it sort of suits people's needs to deny climate change. But, you know, when it starts hitting your own lands, your own, I mean, the drought, come on, I don't know, you're in Arizona, am I right?
You're right.
Anybody's there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you had climate catastrophes recently?
No.
You haven't had drought and temperatures
no,
over,
those aren't
over
drought-
120?
Well, that's not a catastrophe, and it's not unusual. There are temperatures over 120 every single year, and there always have been in the west along the western edge of the state. The hottest places on Earth are Death Valley and also Bullhead City, Arizona, which almost every summer has peaks over 120. It's not unusual. It's not a catastrophe, and it's not unmanageable.
Okay, well then, I think in some places it has been. Maybe you're more used to it.
It may well have been, yeah. And you're not wrong. There have been some climate. The climate does change. Absolutely. Let me see. Hang on one second. And caller, I'll be with you after the break. And a little bit of housekeeping. We're a little late on a break. I do want to continue this thread, and I also want to respect the caller's time and have them ask you questions. And we're going to be civil and polite throughout this entire hour. Everyone, just a little shot across the bow for someone challenged nicely, because we have a very, very well-studied guest on these topics, and the stuff about espionage is just fascinating. In the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios, we'll be right back in about 3 minutes. Swap shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track. Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the swap shop. Let's listen.
Never give up on the power of the swap shop.
Who knows? And I mean, somebody could have had a whole bunch of old pagers laying around, and they called the swap shop and said, "Can we buy them? We got an order for some pagers. We just need to work on them a little bit first."
Swap shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Mark Levin. Liberty Watch on KVOI is dedicated to the notion that government remains servant, not master. Sounds like Charles has been reading my books. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
Even old New York was once New Amsterdam. Why they changed it, I can't say.
People just liked it better that way.
So take me back to Constantinople. No, you can't go back to Constantinople. Been a long time gone. Constantinople, why did Constantinople get the works? That's nobody's business but the Turks. Istanbul.
Istanbul.
And talking about the Turks with us a little bit is Charlotte Dinette. She's got a wonderful book called Follow the Pipeline, and it basically demonstrates the interwoven nature of oil and war, amongst many other things, along with almost a spy novel. It's not a novel, it's true life aspect of her father, who was the CIA or the precursor of the CIA's first casualty. And was later honored as such. He's got a. Does his star have a name on it or no?
No, they don't have a name. If you were to enter the lobby of the CIA, there's
right.
a big wall off to the right, and it's the Wall of Honor, and it's covered with stars. These represent the individuals who died in service of the intelligence CIA. And they decided to include my father because he died right before the CIA was created, but he had some of the same early training and was actually highly prized. I came to learn about. So he was the first star. And by the way, his code name was Carrot, C-A-R-A-T. He was somebody who was in his undergraduate work at Harvard. He was a European historian, but then he got sent to Beirut in the 30s to teach at the American University of Beirut, and he became fascinated in the region and the peoples. He, you know, his students were from all over. And so then he became an expert in Islam. He learned Arabic, but he had students that were from all over. There were Jews, there were Arabs, there were Shiites, Sunnis, and so on. And he became an expert in it. And today, you don't see that so much.
No.
And that's why I learned that the CIA actually prized him and are now using him as a model for how to deal effectively in a world rife with conflict.
Was his nickname Indiana?
Carrot, C-A-R-I-T.
No, you missed it.
Not Indiana.
I couldn't resist.
That's all right.
What is the connection between big banks and big oil? Our caller dropped off. Oh, well. Call back. What is the connection between big banks and big oil and the behind-the-scenes maneuverings of very powerful people?
Well, let's look at Gaza right now. I know, I've researched this, that there are big plans for redeveloping that whole strip of land, which is adjacent to the Mediterranean Sea. When I first went to Beirut, I learned that Lebanon was the crossroads to the Middle East, it was called, or the gateway to the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it's the gateway to Middle East oil. And I come back to, you know, pipelines terminated there, and then they off-shipped the oil to Europe. So anyway, now wait a minute. What was your question? Oh yeah,
the connection of big money, big banks.
And I learned this: no bank, no international finance institution, like the World Bank, for instance, is going to finance a big infrastructure project as long as there's unrest in the region. And of course, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, you don't want your expensive oil pipeline to get dynamited.
Yeah, exactly. So. So what are you going to do? Now, it turns out that there's huge finds of oil and natural gas off the coast.
Mm-hmm. Of Gaza, right.
Gaza, Israel, Lebanon, and Syria. And the first find was in 2000, and a bigger one was found in 2010. It's called the Leviathan Field. But there's part of this discovery was called the Gaza Marine. And what I learned and what I document in my book is that there were two raids into Gaza, nothing like currently, mm-hmm. but they were significant. One was in 2007, the other was in 2014. I think I got the dates right. At any rate, the whole idea was to prevent the Palestinians from getting hold of oil off their coast, the Gaza Marine. Netanyahu and his right-wing cohorts did not want this, claiming that any of the proceeds would go to funding terrorism instead of improving the lives of the people of Palestine. A lot of people don't accept that, but at any rate, now you fast forward, and because the goal now is to totally crush Hamas, but also to literally wipe out the region, just get rid of all those Palestinians. And so there's massive ethnic cleansing going on.
What's the evidence of that?
The goal is to, you know, ship them off to somewhere in the Egyptian desert.
But what's the evidence of that, Charlotte?
Pardon me?
What's the evidence? Where's there any?
Oh, there's tons of evidence. I mean, the UN just came out. First of all, the International Criminal Court has issued arrest warrants for Netanyahu and his defense minister for committing war crimes.
Yeah, but they don't go after Russia for invading Ukraine, but they do go after Netanyahu for defending against a terrible attack. I don't know that's very equitable, to use a modern term.
No, we will lovingly disagree over
we
that.
We will. Yes,
I mean,
that's true.
All you have to do is watch it on TV. Your eyes are not going to lie to you.
Wait a minute. Hold on. That's a brilliant point.
Too much, and it's extremely upsetting.
That's a brilliant point. Based on what you know of the broadcast media in the United States, can you trust what you see on the TV?
Well, look, I'll tell you. There is one station that I watch that I think has done fantastic coverage of the war in Iraq, and it's called Democracy Now! And it's on a nonprofit outfit called Free Speech TV. But the reporting is excellent. They have diplomats on. They have UN people. They have people from all walks. And you will see, almost on a daily basis, the horrific destruction of Gaza. And, I mean, the buildings, they're starving the people to death.
No, the people who are
to allow food in there.
The people who are starving. Wait, stop.
I mean,
just
you know,
a second.
Some people call the Democratic president Genocide Joe. Why would he risk his legacy? And he cared a lot about his legacy. Why would he risk his legacy to continue arming a right wing government that has pursued genocide?
The reason, first of all, I don't know that there's any evidence of genocide. I think that if you want to look at genocide, the Hamas founding document says that it's part of the purpose of it to not only to end Israel but to end Jews. And if you want to talk about genocide, Hamas is based on genocide. I mean, you got to look at it. You got to look. You got
the founding document. They've revised it. They realized that that's they've come.
It's
to
not
terms,
attain.
Though.
It's not attainable.
Well, maybe you could say that, but I think
that's a lousy. Maybe it's an acknowledgement of reality. Okay.
Compared to the state of Israel, they're not that big a deal. You know, well, Netanyahu wants to make them a big deal. But I don't see how anyone could deny. I mean,
I don't see how anyone could claim. Hold on a second. We got a caller coming in. Maybe maybe they'll shed some light on it. Caller, your first name, please.
Rick.
Go ahead, Rick. You're on the air with Charlotte Dinette, and it's a brilliant book called Follow the Pipelines. Go right ahead, please, Rick.
Well, I'd like to agree with Charlotte.
Okay.
And I think the Israelis need to put down the weapons. The Israelis need to stop their genocide. And they need to have a peace concert. And maybe they can have a concert out in the desert and have a bunch of a peace mix and some peace bands and celebrate peace. Oh, wait a second. They already tried that on October 7th, and they were murdered by Palestinian, by Gazans, by Hamas, by terrorists.
Okay.
There was peace October 6th.
Okay, Rick, thank you. We got your point. I appreciate it. All right. There's a contrasting view, Charlotte. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, one day the full story of October 7th will be told. And there's a lot of dissent in Israel, as you may know. It's both against Netanyahu trying to change the judiciary. He's trying to stay out of jail, quite frankly. And even now, if you find out, he's just tried to delay something to further court proceedings. So as long as he is a wartime president, he's going to stay out of jail, and he's not going to have a full investigation. But one thing I can say with certainty, and this has been fully documented, the Hamas attack was known ahead of time. It was known a month ahead of time. The
documented by who?
What did you say?
You said it's been fully documented. Where can I read the document?
Well, all the major newspapers, they've documented this. I mean, you can call it the mainstream media if you want. The fact of the matter is the Egyptians, who work closely with the Israelis, after all, they abut each other. They sent a warning that something was afoot. And then there was a woman who was in the Israeli Defense Force whose job it was to monitor the prison cells. I mean, you know, Gaza is essentially a prison. And the monitoring along the walls is so sensitive that if a butterfly sits on a wire, it starts triggering alarms. I learned this from a report, but at any rate, this was well known. There is no way in hell that this incredibly sophisticated Israeli government
missed it.
Could have allowed all these breaches of its perimeter. And I will tell you with absolute assurances that Netanyahu knew about it, and he used it as a pretext.
Got it.
He had the perfect pretext. And it's sad. It's terrible.
We're up on a break. Let's go ahead and take the break and continue to discuss on the other side. Don't lose the thread, because I think it's an interesting point to be discussed. All right. Stand by in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios at 520-790-2040. And we'll be back after this break. And you call in, feel free to agree or disagree. Just don't be disagreeable doing it, and we'd be in your debt.
Thank you for listening to Liberty Watch.
Swap Shop trains are coming, rolling down that free market track.
Sunday mornings, you can buy, sell, or trade anything lawful and moral on the Swap Shop. Let's listen.
I wanted to give a big shout out to Arizona Tree. I noticed a saguaro, and it was going to fall right on my well. The biggest arm blew off, and it lost its balance.
Well, so, we do support the right of cactus to keep and bear arms.
Swap Shop, Sundays 10 to 11 a.m., right before Liberty Watch.
Hi, it's Dennis Prager. Liberty Watch is dedicated to the notion that government remain servant, not master. Goes very well with my concept of E Pluribus Unum, liberty, and in God we trust. Congratulations on 20 years on KVOI, Charles.
Yeah, they're gonna save the planet, but not your liberty. Because when they're talking endangered species, they ain't talking about you and me. Where's Paul Revere when you need him? Guess he's spinning in his grave. Because the green coats are a-coming, boys. Are we still in the land of the brave? Hey, hey.
And welcome back, hopefully, to the land of the brave. We have Charlotte Dinette. She is the daughter of the CIA, of a brilliant spy, the CIA's first casualty, if you will, and honored as such on the Wall of Honor at the CIA. And her book is in part a very detailed explanation of the pathways that the quest for oil is basically the road to perdition. Would that be an accurate description of your point of view?
Yeah, that would have made another great subtitle, The Road to Perdition.
Yeah.
The subtitle is Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil, which we are in right now. You know, Netanyahu's goal is to build an energy corridor, and you got to get rid of all, you have to de-radicalize and depopulate that whole area. And there's an end game to this that does not get discussed on the mainstream media. The end game is development. The Abraham Accords that were accomplished under Trump were the beginnings of these development plans. Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, recently spoke about Gaza being a beautiful waterfront property. That's how he would look at it. But the point is that Netanyahu wants to exploit the $500 billion worth of oil and natural gas off the coast and to ship it up to Europe via pipeline. Europe now is energy hungry because of the war in Ukraine.
And
so
wait a minute.
They're all related.
Hold it, Charlotte.
And there's scrambles all around.
Charlotte,
hang on. Yeah.
Europe was energy hungry before the war. And the reason was because of some of the horrible policies, the so-called green energy ideas, which in the long run may work if we develop the technologies for them. But the problem is forcing people into options they don't want. That caused energy starvation long before the war from the Ukraine war that was started by Russia.
Well, my interpretation of that is that Russia was supplying cheap energy to Europe through, for one thing, the Nord Stream 1 and the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And what the West did and NATO did is they were very concerned about the completion of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. And Biden even came out and said, we've got to stop it. Well, it got sabotaged.
Yeah, surprise,
and,
surprise, surprise.
The latest news on that is it was likely some Ukrainian group that did it. People can look it up. They can Google to see who was responsible. And you always have to say who benefited
right.
by sabotaging that pipeline.
Cui bono.
What? Oh, no, what?
I said cui bono.
Oh, cui bono, yeah, exactly, cui bono. Well,
right.
The Russians didn't benefit from it.
No.
The West but because that pipeline was going to give cheap energy to Germany, and Germany was weaning off, you're right about this, clean energy, it was weaning off nuclear energy, for instance. and really needed that cheap natural gas. And once the pipeline was actually closed, the first thing that happened was it got closed, and Biden convinced the German chancellor to do that. Later, it got sabotaged. And so ever since, I mean, that's why Biden had to go to Saudi Arabia and make a deal with King
Ibn Saud.
Yeah, IBN, or, oh, yeah. I just forgot, yeah.
Right.
He, Ibn, what is it? I forget.
It's Saud.
But anyway,
anyway,
MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, that's
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah, you're right. Thank you for
Mohammed Bonesaw, he's the guy that... You know what I'm talking about,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, Adnan Khashoggi murder.
Yeah, Khashoggi. He killed Khashoggi because Khashoggi was a critic.
Didn't just kill him. Cut him
in the West.
Didn't just kill him.
Biden had to go hat in hand to him when the war in Ukraine started to make sure that Saudi Arabia was going to continue to supply cheap energy, and there was a deal struck in June from the European Union, and the deal was with Israel to import gas from the Leviathan fields, and that is the fields off the coast of Israel. But it can't happen as long as there's all this fighting. So now, as you see, what's happened is Gaza's flattened. Now he's gone north, the next country above Israel, going after Lebanon. Lebanon is now essentially a failed state. It used to be a thriving, wonderful, cosmopolitan Paris of the Middle East when I was there. Now it's a failed state. Syria's barely hanging on because it's got Russian support, but it suffered a major civil war. Lebanon had a civil war between 1975 and 1990. I was there in 75 and escaped a sniper's bullet when it was just starting. But at any rate, so the whole region is in turmoil, and yet the powers that be are all talking about how they're going to make a new Middle East. And they've been striving to do this even before the war in Iraq. They were talking about the new Middle East and that they were going to go after seven countries in 5 years to destabilize and then control them. So it's a long-term project, and they think, erroneously, in my opinion, that by slaughtering people, that's going to bring peace. It is not. This is not good. It's not good
Charlotte,
for Jews at all.
Charlotte.
They're feeling much less safe in Israel, and a lot of them realize that. There are a lot of Jewish protesters
country. But, Charlotte, this is dialogue, not monologue, so let me ask.
Oh, yeah, sure, stop. Go ahead.
No, I'm not saying shut up. I'm just saying let's go back and forth. If there is a huge gas reserve off the coast of Gaza and Netanyahu wants to monetize it and create both a flow of energy and a reverse flow of money, why is that a bad thing?
At what cost?
Well, if the Gaza, you know, there's no reasons why there has to be a cost to it. It could be a benefit. It could be
40,000 lives, 44,000 lives, probably.
That was the result
of the number of people under the rubble.
That was was an unfortunate result of a war started by the people in Gaza.
Well, again, as I said, you will find eventually, hopefully, you will find the real story about what happened on October 7th. From what I know and what is documented is that Hamas was going to target military outlets, not civilians.
Maybe,
now,
but they didn't
do that. Civilians were killed. I have some documentation which will probably upset you, but the defense inaugurate. I can't think of the plan, but the plan is, If you have to kill Israelis to prevent them from being hostages, then you're going to have to do it. And
yeah,
there's been documentation on that.
I'd like to see it and read it before we say it's so. That's the standard.
I could send you the documentation.
Please
on
do.
That. And why is Netanyahu resisting a full investigation about how this happened?
Because he's in the middle of a war.
It was horrible what happened.
The reason is because he's in the middle of a war.
He wanted this war.
Maybe.
He wanted it.
Maybe he did.
The extension of two other wars of him invading Gaza. This was his opportunity, and he took it.
Okay. On that note, let's take our third and last break of this hour. And I think you make points well. And I'm glad that you're here to present them. And I'm glad that you're here to present them. And we'll have a little bit more of it on the other side of this break in the Wilkinson Wealth Management Studios at 520-790-2040.
This is Dennis Weaver, and you're listening to Liberty Watch. You know, the exchange of ideas is so important to maintain our freedom in this country. And Liberty Watch is a show that promotes freedom.
And welcome back to the last segment of Liberty Watch. We have the joy and pleasure of having with us Charlotte Dinette. She's written four books. The last one is Follow the Pipeline. And what is the subtitle again, Charlotte?
Uncovering the Mystery of the Last Spy, which would be my father, and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil.
Where do you want people to get your book? By the way, folks, the book is fascinating. You might not agree with the author, but the point of the matter is she does marvelous background, in-depth reporting, because she is a reporter, of what's behind a lot of the controversies from World War I all the way up. And you may or may not agree with her, but it's still fascinating, and it's honest background information. And so where do you want people to get the book?
Amazon.com is the logical place, whatever people may think of Amazon. And the other place, Chelsea Green, is the publisher. You can go there. And just your local bookstore. Just ask for it, and you can get it. And there are different versions. There's an e-book version. There's an audio version, which I love. She does a great job. So that's how you can get it.
Got it. Okay. I always want people to get their money's worth out of an hour invested with me on their program and chance, because we do have a book buying audience, and it is a very, very well done book. And you submit the idea that Netanyahu wanted this war. There are people who say that too about FDR and the Japanese, also in some respects over oil. So, what is there to be gained from a conflict like this? Briefly, because we're going to run out of time.
You know, one of the things that you never hear, ever, is the role of oil in these conflicts. And you have to ask why. And the answer is simple. It remains the fuel of the military. The military, worldwide, militaries consume more oil than any other institution. And one of the big lessons of World War I and World War II was that Germany lost both wars because its
oil machine ran
out of gas.
Right, that's true. But it's not just the military. It's every bit of society benefits from the free flow of oil at market prices. It's a vital interest to the entire world, not just militaries, but everybody. And the people should try to monetize that. It shouldn't come as any surprise to us. Yet there are leanings in the world to just demonize that. And it's what the world runs on oil.
Well, this is true. The time we find another energy that doesn't cause so much human suffering.
I agree.
Anyway, I talked to an oil company guy who told me, he says, I've been part of it. He says they'll stop at nothing to get the oil.
I agree.
They'll do regime change, assassination, wars, genocide, whatever it takes to control the oil. And they're all competing against each other.
It's like Gordon Gekko said, greed is good. I get it.
Right.
I get it. I don't agree with that. And that's why I say I'm not here to defend oil companies. But they do provide a vital thing. And there's a lot of things we should be looking at. You know, just because I don't believe that in this panic pornography that's being sold on climate change doesn't mean that we can't do a better job and be more efficient. And maybe we can do it cheaper. Hold on a minute. Caller, your first name, please.
Hi, it's Debbie Charles.
Debbie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'm leaving my opinion out of it because that's not the point of my call. I just want to let you know I sent you a couple articles to back up what she was saying to you
about Charlotte is saying?
Egypt.
Okay, good.
About Egypt warning Israel about the attack October of 23.
I'm open to yeah. documentation. I'm open to evidence. And, like I say, andia tura et alterna pars. Let the other side be heard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I thought you might want those.
Good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay,
all right. Have
you.
A great day.
You're welcome.
And that opens a line for you. No, it doesn't. We're almost at the 55-minute mark, so that'll be the end of calls. They got time for one more if somebody wants to. There's one thing that I want to get to, and I didn't get past page 210 in your book, so maybe you know. Did you ever get to the bottom of the plane crash that killed your dad?
Well, you know, one of the things about assassination by plane crash is that it's effective because, A, it's hard to prove what exactly happened, and it's hard to know who did it, okay? What I've done is I've used history, and I'm always looking into the context behind whatever. And in this case, I can tell you that I have a theory, but it hasn't been fully proved. And I will say this much. It comes down between the British and the Russians, both who were very jealous of the United States becoming a world power because of Saudi oil, and how they did it. Well, I describe it in the book, mm-hmm. and, people will see that I've come very close. And by the way, the world's most famous spy of the 20th century,
right.
His name was Kim Philby.
Right.
And he was a double agent. He was working for the Brits, but he was secretly working for the Soviets. And he was stationed in Turkey in 1946, at the time my father was in Lebanon. And they were counterparts. They were both in charge of counterintelligence, which is spy hunting. You know, mm-hmm. keep the spies out of your own organization and penetrate others. Philby was very active at this time. Not many people know this aspect, but his father was an advisor to King Ibn Saud.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of combines the British-Soviet need to stop the rise of this upstart power called the United States of America. That's the great game, and it started. My father was one. I am claiming that my father was one of the first casualties, and now, oh my God! If you look at the wars, and if you look at the millions dead, I mean, I have an analysis of the Holocaust too, and how the Jews were sold out because Ibn Saud didn't want Palestinians emigrating to Palestine, because he threatened it was going to hurt America's oil concession. So, I mean, I can see oil being responsible for the genocide of Armenians in World War I.
Yeah,
I mean,
you put a pretty
going on.
There's
it's
a pretty good
and it's got to stop.
There's a pretty good demonstration of that connection in your book. I saw that about the Armenians. I thought it was fascinating. You know, the thing is, if we would look at technologies, like for instance, nuclear. If we would look at not big scale nuclear, but small scale nuclear. There are a lot of fascinating small-scale nuclear plants that could power whole communities, if not small cities. And it wouldn't take a tremendous amount of building or infrastructure or cause a waste storage problem. There are a lot of ways to look at alternative energy. Have you looked at solar vortex towers at all?
No.
Solar vortex towers are a fascinating concept. No one has built an effective one yet, but it is a chimney that is 3,000 feet tall and 300 feet wide. And it's built one story off the ground. In other words, it's on stilts. And it takes advantage of what's called the Venturi principle. What you do is, for every 1,000 feet in elevation, you lose about 6 degrees in temperature. And so what it does is it uses a whole bunch of solar panels around the bottom to superheat the air to around 160 degrees. And that creates 160 degree air on the bottom. And at the top, the temperature is 18 degrees cooler than the ambient air at the bottom before you superheat it. This creates a tremendous vortex. And what you do in this chimney is you have hundreds of turbines. and that updraft turns the turbines, and you can get as much power out of one of those as out of a small nuclear plant. It costs very, very little to build it. You can run it with a staff of 75 people for 75 years, and at the end, you dynamite it and clean up the bricks.
Well, that's fascinating, I'm glad that you're paying attention to that.
Yeah.
I'm all for looking at new technologies.
Another technology is geothermal. We now have the ability to drill to 40,000 feet or below fairly easily, where we can tap geothermal sources. And you know where you do the drilling? You do it right in the middle of a current power plant. So you don't disturb anything. You're in your own footprint. You don't have to tear up one bit of Mother Earth at all. You mine the geothermal energy, and you replace some of the electrical energy generated with petrochemical fuels with geothermal energy right in the same exact place. There's a lot of things we could do that are not just drill, baby, drill. Well, that is drill, baby, drill, but it's not drilling for oil, okay? There's a lot of things we could do, especially the people who have a tendency to learn lean conservative would be in favor of that. But there's some things you can't do but with oil-related products. For instance, one of the things you got to do is replace the energy efficiency. You get tremendous efficiency of burning something to power it. The internal combustion engine generates a lot of power for the amount of fuel you put in it. And until you can get to that level of efficiency with electricity will never, ever be viable.
Well, who knows? I got an EV. I got an electric vehicle. I know that's just the beginning. Look, I think humankind is going to find a way out of this.
I agree.
It has to.
Yeah, I agree.
The whole thing is too dangerous. These wars, my God, we're getting so close to a nuclear war. This is insanity. And oftentimes it's over resources. You know, Iran, my God, I don't know. It's just, it's a serious time. By the way, many of your listeners may not know that in eastern Ukraine has the biggest reserves of oil and natural gas in Europe, next to Russia, if you consider that part of Europe. And that's never discussed. That's why all this fighting is going on that part of Ukraine. And both presidents knew this. Trump knew it. Biden knew it. Burisma, what the hell is Burisma? It was a major gas company in Ukraine.
Right.
And
a major
the Biden administration was encouraging them to go in and develop the natural gas in Ukraine. It hasn't been, the fields haven't been developed yet.
That's why they're a major funding source for the Biden family.
I haven't tracked that, but that is for sure. And once again, you know, we're not told. And
of course
that's what I'm trying to do is just bring these facts to the surface so that we can debate them further. Because now, you know, human life has been expended at horrific amounts.
Yeah. There's been a terrible human detriment.
At all costs.
At all costs. Yeah.
But Charlotte,
look at the bright side. A nuclear war would really lessen the demand curve for energy.
Oh, my God. You know, here's the thing, though. Why would anyone want it? For instance, like, you know, Saudi Arabia now wants to develop nuclear.
Right.
There's all sorts of underground, quiet negotiations. That's one of the deals. It's called It's the India Middle East Corridor. This is another project they've got going.
You should also
they're still working on it.
Charlotte, you should also look at the connection between General Electric and Saudi Arabia, because that's who's going to build their nuclear power plants.
Oh yeah, there you go. And the negotiations going on. Of course, Israel is a little worried about that. You know, I mean, Israel and Saudi Arabia used to be mortal enemies.
Yeah, it used to be.
The Saudis were the ones that didn't want Jews migrating to to Palestine.
Right.
After the war, and now there's rapprochement. And by the way, it's the Abraham Accords that got the Palestinians really concerned, because they were being dismissed.
Right, because they were being
their land that was originally
Yeah, that's been that's already been litigated.
Yeah, and 750,000 people were expelled, okay? I mean, Guterres, who was the head of the United Nations, made the point that you can't be that the whole Gaza thing can't be seen in a vacuum. Palestinians
it has to be looked at. It has to be looked at holistically. I agree with you, but we are out of time. And listen, this has been an absolutely wonderful hour, and I've bitten my tongue a lot. it's now hurting, but that's okay.
Well, I appreciate you. You were so kind to allow me to express my views. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate what you're trying to do, that we have civil discourse.
Yeah. You know, and how much extra does it cost to be nice?
Yeah. And really?
It's not that I think that you have a lot of information. I disagree with your conclusions. I think some of them are not valid. But that doesn't mean that I invalidate you. It means that I deal with the evidence you present. And if we could get back to, that's what this program is dedicated to. There's people that, believe me, there's people in this audience that don't want to hear people like you. All right.
Yeah, but you had the nice woman call in and send you documentation, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I do too.
I love what you said. What is the cost of talking? And here wars at all costs, you know. But if we could only start talking more, it would.
Well, some wars are necessary.
Humanity would survive.
Some wars are necessary. It was necessary. It was necessary to declare war on Japan after they attacked Pearl Harbor. And I suppose if they had a treaty, it was necessary for Hitler and Mussolini to declare war on us because we declared war on their ally, Japan. I get it. That was a war that needed to be fought and needed to be won. And I think the right guys won it. I think the Civil War in the United States was an unnecessary war and needn't have been fought. And I think that the issue of slavery could have been litigated and not gone to war over. I absolutely believe that. But I still think, even though I refer to Lincoln as the tyrant Lincoln, I still think that the right guys won the American Civil War.
Yeah, well, wars do have to be fought. And by the way, intelligence is needed, you know.
And
whatever you think of the CIA, and I've been very critical of it in the past, but I come down to understanding that you have to have them. It's how far do they go on orders to do something that I would wager that a lot of them don't feel real comfortable about doing what they're doing.
I'm saying, and also
I got the tour. I got to meet some of these people. I came away having a different opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of them really believe in what they're doing, and they're patriotic. And
yeah.
I just feel like the wrong people are giving orders, frankly, and I don't know how we'll ever get out of it, but talking more, diplomacy, that's the way to do it.
By the way, I think you
are... Alternative energy?
I think you are incorrect about the first casualty, America's first spying casualty. I think that some of the people that Washington employed died as a result in his spy network in the Revolutionary War.
Absolutely. I'm sorry. I'm saying I think he was the first casualty of the great game for oil. That's what I'm saying.
There were other
casualties. That's...
I retract my statement. You're right. I'm wrong. Thank you.
Whatever. I'm just so glad that you're allowing this conversation to happen, because everyone has to agree. You don't hear it. You don't hear it on the mainstream media. They just won't discuss it.
There isn't room in the mainstream media. It's a soundbite culture. Dan Bongino says something absolutely brilliant. Is the only thing people remember about a political campaign is soundbites and snapshots. And he's exactly right. We've become a soundbite and snapshot culture. Furthermore, I'm a participant in that culture because during the week, the way I afford my addiction to radio, I pay for this airtime. The way I pay for it is I work in the sales force of the radio station. So I'm as guilty of encouraging the 30-second soundbite as anyone in the terms of commercials. So I monetize it too. I think that makes me evil. I'm trying to monetize the soundbite.
You gotta live, for God's sake. I had to become a lawyer. you know, as a writing truth to power, speaking truth to power, it's not really financially remunerative.
No.
That's why I became a lawyer, to pay the friggin' bills. But if I had my way, I would be focusing entirely on writing. But
you know, Charlotte, you know what that sounds to me?
What?
Too Jewish.
Huh?
Too Jewish.
Well, let me add something, because I got a criticism hurled toward me, very critical of my approach, because I, and this was by a left commentator, I might say, who's doing a lot of work on voter fraud. Anyway, he was saying that I was repeating the old meme. That all, because of my focus on Israel's development of its energy policies, that I was recreating the meme, or what is the other word? I can't think of it. But anyway, that all Jews care about is money, and that's anti-Semitic. That's what I was. I was astounded.
I don't get that. I don't get that you're anti-Semitic. I get that you're a progressive. You've said that to me. It's not a secret. But
yeah.
I don't think that in any way, shape, or form you don't like Jewish people. I mean, you just did an hour on the radio with one. I didn't hear any curled lip in it.
Well, no, that's the fact. And I mean, for this, you know, it's used a lot to silence critics. You know, you're anti-Semitic.
And, they do the same thing with racism.
A fair amount of bravery to fight back on that. And I'm 100% supportive of the Jews for Peace organization, or people who say, look, our fundamental values are being destroyed and eroded, and we can't stand for this. And, you know, the whole irony of the victims of genocide becoming the perpetrators, they're against it, and I applaud them. And there are a few other Jewish Currents, the editor of that prestigious magazine, has called it genocide, come out and talked about it. So there are people that are, you know, speaking out, and it's at a considerable risk, I should say.
I think it's ironic that the people who are the greatest victims of genocide of the 20th century are being accused of something they did not do.
And you know, hey, that part I understand. It's very difficult. I really do understand it. So let's just continue the dialogue and try to figure it out. And you gave me that opportunity, and you didn't call me anti-Semitic.
No,
and,
you're not.
And by the way, like, I have this whole theory about what happened during the Holocaust, and the Jews weren't rescued in time.
Oh, no, they weren't. That they certainly were not, and they could have been. They could have. We could have easily bombed the concentration camps and put the gas chambers out of commission. And
exactly.
And FDR did not. I'm sorry, I didn't get to that part. But the one part I got to get to is I'm now 10 minutes late for station identification and starting the next hour. God bless you. And the book again, say the whole title so people can look it up.
Follow the Pipelines, Uncovering the Mystery of a Lost Spy and the Deadly Politics of the Great Game for Oil.
Okay, Charlotte, I have to let you go at this point. Have a blessed day.
Same to you, and thanks so much.
You're welcome. AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice. Stay tuned for America Armed and Free.